to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, your source for learning more about fly fishing in cold water, warm water, and salt water. Hello, I'm Roger Maves, your host for tonight's show. On this broadcast, we'll be featuring Eric Noguski, and he'll be answering your questions on fly patterns for Pennsylvania waters. I think I just mispronounced your name, Eric Noguski, right? Yeah.
Yeah, that's Noguski's correct. It happens all the time. It's okay.
Yeah. This show will be 90 minutes in length, and we're broadcasting live over the Internet. If you'd like to ask Eric a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com. Use that Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. And while you're there, make sure you sign up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Just fill in your name and email address in the form on the right side of our web pages, and we'll let you know when the next live show will be. This broadcast is being recorded and will be available for playback on our website about 48 hours after the show ends. You'll also be able to find it on any of the podcast distribution sites like Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. So if you have to leave early, you can return to our website or any of the podcast platforms at your convenience and listen to the recordings at any time. If you're out and about on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter, we'd sure appreciate it if you'd share our podcast. And when you do, use the hashtag AskAboutFlyFishing and hashtag FlyFishing. If you have a moment, do it right now. We've got a few links on our homepage. We'll make it easy for you, and we'd sure appreciate it. The content of this broadcast is copyrighted and is the property of the Knowledge Group, Inc., doing business as Ask About Fly Fishing. When we return, we'll be talking with Eric about fly patterns for Pennsylvania waters. The Colorado River at Lee's Ferry is called by some the world's largest spring creek. It's a massive, clear-running tailwater fishery that runs 15.5 miles from the base of the Glen Canyon Dam to the upper reaches of the Grand Canyon. At times, it gives the impression of being not one or two, but a series of parallel spring creek-like waterways. The fishing is great, and the scenery is gorgeous. Lee's Ferry Anglers provides professional guide service to this outstanding rainbow trout fishery, as well as food and lodging at Cliff Dwellers Restaurant and Lodge. See for yourself why Lee's Ferry is on every fly fisher's must-do list. Visit leesferryanglers.com or call them at 800-962-9755. Again, that's leesferryanglers.com or call them at 800-962-9755. Before we introduce Eric, we'd like to let you know about the great prizes we have to give away tonight. For our drawing tonight, we'll be giving away 1-year membership to Fly Fishers International and a 1-year subscription to the Fly Fishing and Tying Journal. So you have 2 chances to win tonight in our drawing. If you haven't registered yet for the drawing, you can do so now. Just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and look for the link under Eric's section that says Register for our free drawing. Click on that link and fill out the form, and we'll announce the winners at the end of the show. We'll also be giving away a copy of Eric's book, Favorite Flies for Pennsylvania, courtesy of Stackpole Books. And to learn more about what Stackpole has to offer, go to stackpolebooks.com and browse through all the great publications that they have. They have just tons of books on fly fishing and fishing. So here's how you can win Eric's book. You must be the first person to answer the question we ask at the end of the show. The question will be about something that Eric and I talk about during the show. Just submit your answer along with your name and location using the text box on our homepage. And that's the same text box that you can ask questions in during the show. So listen closely, type fast, take notes, and if you get that answer right, you're first, you'll win copy of Eric's book, Favorite Flies for Pennsylvania. Our guest tonight is Eric Noguski. Eric has spent the last 40 years chasing trout around Pennsylvania with a fly rod in hand. He's the owner of Rise Forms Fly Fishing Guide Service and also guide for Relentless Fly Fishing, a TCO fly shop. He currently lives and guides out of Boiling Springs, Pennsylvania, in the heart of the Cumberland Valley. Eric has a biology degree in aquatic ecology and aquatic entomology and is heavily involved in conservation activities in the Cumberland Valley as a board member of Cumberland Valley TU. He also finds time to serve on the board of the Pennsylvania Fly Fishing Museum Association, working to preserve and promote the history of fly fishing in Pennsylvania. His recent book, Favorite Flies for Pennsylvania, published by Stackpole Books, is out now. He has also written an article on sow bugs in August-September 2021 issue of Fly Fisher Magazine. Eric, welcome to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio.
Roger, thank you very much for having me. It's an honor to be here. Looking over the names of people who have been on your show, it's pretty impressive. I'm not sure that I meet the ball. I don't know. I'm
you just did. You just did. You're there. So your name's on the list, whether you like it or not. You know, you have to
no.
Man up and accept the responsibility.
Right.
Yeah, no. Wow. I mean, I'm just looking at your book and all the years you spent fishing in Pennsylvania. You know, I can't wait to learn from you tonight. So it'll be a pleasure to do this interview. First of all, we've got some great questions in tonight. You know, you recently published a book, The Favorite Flies for Pennsylvania, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But first, I want you to, because you start out the book with this, tell us, especially those of us who have never fished in Pennsylvania, why it's such a great state to fish in, and what are the things that Pennsylvania has to offer us as fly fishers?
Well, I think the big thing is, well, first we'll talk about the numbers. We've got over 16,000 miles of wild trout water in the state. A lot of those miles are little blue lines with wild brook trout and wild brown trout in them, but it also goes bigger to the upper Delaware system and other larger trout waters in the state. The other thing is variety. I mean, we have not only those freestone creeks that I was talking about, we also have the spring creeks and the scattered throughout the valleys in the throughout the state. Cumberland Valley is probably one of the more famous ones for the spring creeks, but certainly some famous spring creeks around the center of the state. State College has Spring Creek and Spruce Creek, and Penn's Creek is a spring creek for at least a good portion of it, and it has some freestone streams that sort of changes character a little bit. But yeah, I mean, Pennsylvania is home to some of the finest spring creek fishing in the world, in my humble opinion.
Yeah.
And other than that, we also have some really good tailwater fisheries. And it's interesting, one thing that sometimes, I guess, when I think of tailwaters, and maybe I'm wrong when I think of this, I think of bigger systems like the upper Delaware system or the Bighorn out west or the Henry's Fork, you know, these big sprawling rivers that are like the South Holston in Tennessee, these big sprawling waters that are, you know, a lot like spring creeks, but they're mostly from a bottom release dam, and that cold water makes these fertile and really great trout fisheries. But the other unique thing that we have in Pennsylvania is we have some smaller tailwaters, which I think is neat. And maybe it's not as unique as I think it is just because I haven't gotten around, but we have some small tailwaters that are only 25 to 40 feet wide, and they stay cold year-round. And in the heat of the summer, we're still fishing water that's in the 50s and low 60s. And it's just sort of the land of opportunity, really. The Keystone State, just throughout the year, we have a 365-day fishery here in the state, which makes me feel fortunate to be here for sure.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you that. So you've got some winter tailwater fishing there and some higher, I guess, mountain small streams that you can fish when it's hot, right?
Sure.
So you can kind of move around to these different fisheries depending on what season and what it is and what the water temperatures are and so forth. It sounds like plenty of places to fish.
Yeah, for sure. It's kind of neat because Pennsylvania is kind of a big state, and there's also a seasonal difference. What happens in the south central part of the state is generally about 2 weeks, like hatch-wise, is about 2 weeks ahead of the central and the northern part of the state. So you can kind of, like, I can fish Hendrickson's from typically the end of March until almost into June on the upper Delaware system. I can fish that one hatch for several months. It's kind of neat.
Yeah. And you were talking about, yeah, the difference in hatches, too, amongst the different waters, some being very prolific, some being very smaller but very specific. And I thought that was interesting, too. Are there any particular hatches that really strike you as, wow, this is really good fishing for any particular insects or times of year?
I think the first thing that comes to mind is we have a one-tail water just north of Harrisburg, Clarks Creek, and it's got a bug, I've got a mayfly called the dark green drake, and it's as big as the, if not bigger than any other mayfly in the country. And it's kind of specific to very few streams throughout the state. And it just, for a bug nerd like me and a hatch chaser, I'm a dry fly person, it's kind of neat to be able to say, yeah, you know, I fished that hatch, and the trout certainly love them. Yeah, we have certainly some bug factories like Penn's Creek, for instance, where during prime hatch season, you know, the end of May, middle to end of May, you may be seeing 6 or 7 different aquatic insects on the water in various adult, could be spinners, could be duns, could be, it can get really difficult and technical, and one fish is eating one thing and the next fish is eating something different, and it's cool. It's challenging fishing, and it makes you carry a lot of flies, but it's really interesting once you figure it out. There's a sense of satisfaction once you say, all right, I figured it out, I solved the puzzle.
Are there, since we're talking about hatches and seasons, are there some prime times in Pennsylvania you would consider if someone was traveling there and doesn't have the access you have on an everyday basis?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, and the thing is it's pretty much like this everywhere in the East. I think that late May into early June, mid-June, is really prime time for us. I mean, you're going to see all kinds of, even in April, the end of April in some places, you're going to still be seeing some of the stoneflies, the brown and the black stoneflies. And at the same time, when they're coming off in the northern part of the state, you're going to be starting to see sulfurs on some of the streams in the southern part of the state. But yeah, that May to June is really a great time to be in Pennsylvania. And if you could, you know, I've often wished I could take off from and just fish for pretty much the whole month of May to like the 15th of June and then just settle into work. But unfortunately, I haven't been able to.
Yeah, you have to take others fishing, right?
Yeah, exactly. Apparently other people want to go too.
Do you have any runoff issues? I mean, during that season out here, we got runoff problems, but...
No, not a whole lot. I mean, certainly not from snow. I mean, we definitely get some springtime storms that will cause the water to jump, but we don't have a predictable, okay, we know this time of year this stream's not going to be fishable because of runoff like they do, like you guys do out west.
Yeah. You did, I think I read in your book somewhere about August being kind of a tough month for some of the streams there because of the water warming up too much. Are any places particularly to avoid during the heat of the summer?
Yeah, for sure. Any of the bigger freestone streams like Penn's Creek or Pine Creek, there's several Pine Creeks in Pennsylvania, but the big Pine Creek in the northern tier is warms up quite a bit. The Delaware River, the main stem, starts to warm up. Any of the Lehigh, any of those big waters that get a lot of, first of all, they have a lot of surface area, so they get a lot of sun, and they also have a lot of tributaries that are warming up at the same time. But some of those tribs do stay cold and are fishable. So you just have to, it's good to do some homework and to call the local fly shop and, you know, get some info. And as far as everybody that I've run into is certainly willing to help people out that are coming to experience fishing here in the Keystone State.
Uh-huh, yeah. There's a question from Michael Abramowitz from Potomac, Maryland. And he asked, which streams are more challenging in Pennsylvania, the spring creeks or the rivers?
I would have to say, for the most part, the spring creeks, especially the spring creeks here in the Cumberland Valley, are definitely more challenging. They're way more technical. Typically, they don't have the aquatic insect diversity that some of the freestone rivers do. That's not to say that those fish are easy, though, either. One thing about Pennsylvania being a great place to come fish for trout is a lot of people come fish for trout. So a lot of these streams see a lot of pressure. These fish see a lot of flies. But I think the most challenging are definitely the spring creeks. Sometimes you would swear there's not a fish in them. But they're there. They just don't want to come out and play sometimes.
Oh. Okay. Well, I got this book published, Favorite Flies from Pennsylvania. Tell us about how this came about and what your goals were for the book.
Okay. Well, the book came about. It is the Favorite Flies for Pennsylvania is part of a Stackpole book series for favorite flies for several states throughout the country. There's one for the Catskills, Oregon, Colorado, Yellowstone, I'm sure Maine. I'm sure I'm missing some. But the editor, Jay Nichols, had interviewed me for another book called Keystone State Fly Fishing. And after we had done that, he contacted me about writing this book. I was extremely, extremely flattered and a little scared, but I figured I would give it a shot. And the photography part of it was pretty exciting to me. And I've certainly been around the state quite a bit and felt like I had a decent grasp on what it took to be successful on most of the streams. The other thing is that I relied on a number of friends and acquaintances, other guides in Pennsylvania, they were very generous with their fly patterns and what they thought would be worthwhile to be put in the book, and certainly couldn't have done it without them. Really, the whole, I don't know if you want to call it the thesis behind the book, but really I wanted to put myself in the shoes of somebody who had never fished Pennsylvania and was researching it. You know, working at the fly shop, everybody always wants to know, hey, what fly should I use? What fly should I use? What fly should I use? Well, that's not really an easy question. It depends on the time of the year. It depends on where you are. I wanted to sort of make this book accessible to a new angler and try to provide them with a basic fly box for Pennsylvania. You know, a lot of the patterns are, if they're a fly tire, they're easily changed to match specific hatches and things like that. But I wanted it to be as simple as possible, but as thorough as possible.
Yeah. As I looked through there, and as we talked before the show, a lot of them, and I think this is one of the questions from Kevin Compton, Spruce Creek, Pennsylvania, says, did these patterns in your book travel well, that is, produce outside of Pennsylvania? And as I was going through your book, I was noticing, a lot of these flies are familiar to me out west. I guess I probably already know the answer to Kevin's question that you're going to give, but how do they travel?
I think, you know, I haven't traveled a ton around the country. The little that I have, you know, from talking to other people who have done some fishing in other places, you know, a lot of these patterns do travel really well. And even growing up fishing here, people always talked about Montana, and I was looking at these flies they were using, and I was like, these fish must be crazy. I don't know why they're eating those things. They're bright, they're gaudy. I was like, if I threw that on the Latour, every fish would run for a mile. But, you know, going out there for a little bit and having some experience out west, you know, there's definitely some flies in the book that I think pretty much, it'd be hard to think of one off the top of my head in this book that wouldn't travel well. I think that a lot of good flies have basic construction similarities, the profile and the action, if it's a streamer or materials involved in a nymph or something like that. I think a lot of productive flies, no matter where you are, have a lot of similarities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I mean, mayflies are mayflies, right? Caddis are caddis.
For sure.
You might fish them a lot differently, given, like you say, a spring creek versus a freestone or whatever, but certainly their representation and action would be very similar around, I think. You start out your book talking about some old patterns that really weren't included in the main part of your book, where you go into more depth and detail and fishing techniques, which I'd like to highlight as we go through tonight, a lot of those. But I thought maybe you could talk a minute, maybe you could just pick a few, one, two, three, whatever you want to talk about. But some of these some of these patterns that kind of go way back, and as you said, were innovations at the time they were developed. And I guess in many cases shaped the design of flies thereafter and created new trends and new designs. So can you, you know, pick a couple of those out that are your favorites and maybe tell us about those and why they made the book?
Yeah, for sure. To sort of touch on something that you just mentioned, I think that the fly fishing world, the fly tying world, Pennsylvania was one of the first places to kind of deviate from the Catskill dry fly, all those patterns that were coming out of the Catskills, you know, the upright wings and upright divided wood duck wings and the Adams and things like that. We had a different set of challenges. Our waters were different, especially the spring creeks. So flies like the Thorax Dun, like Vince Marinetto's Thorax Dun, you know, that fly, first of all, it's incredibly hard to tie correctly. And in the book, I have a photo of a fly that Tom Baltz, who's another guide here in the Cumberland Valley and a phenomenal fly tier, he tied it. You know, that whole construction of the cut wings and the tails serving as sort of like outriggers on a canoe to get flotation, the imprint of the hackles as the mayfly legs. You know, these were flies that were developed to fish flat water. Like that fly was developed to fish flat water, super picky trout. And those, that thorax, moving the wing back a little bit on the shank of the hook was... that was Vince, you know, that came from here. And I'm definitely Cumberland Valley centric, so you have to forgive me for that. So I can't help it. I can't help it. But those elements of design have translated into a lot of more modern patterns. The one I have in the book here is Henry Ramsey's Thorax Dun, and he fully admits to, and rightfully so, the design and the structure of that Vince Marinetto's Thorax Dun, you know, pretty much changed dry fly fishing for super selective, picky trout. Those hours that they spent on the Latour looking at how those fish were feeding and things like that. Another one, I'd be remiss if I didn't talk about Ed Shank. You know, his contributions are huge, not just his fly patterns, like his Shank's Minnow and the Shank's Sculpin, which was pretty much the first Sculpin pattern. He has a Crestbug, you know, and these are all spring creek flies. And the other thing, the techniques that were developed with especially Ed's streamers, where he would dead drift those, and nobody else was dead drifting streamers before Ed. And so not only the fly patterns, but also the techniques that made those fly patterns work so well. You know? Mm-hmm. The other one is that if I had to pick one more, probably James Leeserning, you know, his Black Gnat, those soft tackle flimps, and that whole school of fishing and swinging wet flies and flimps. And that's really where the emerger came from. And his contribution to fly fishing is immense, and I think sometimes he's overlooked. Another Pennsylvanian.
Well, the Leeserning's lift is famous, right, for fishing
Absolutely. Those
soft tackle patterns, and not just the black mat, any soft tackle pattern. And we always, I mean, that's, I don't know, I must have read about that when I was in junior high school. And, yeah, you know, that's something, yeah, I never forget, and I always do it, too. It's just become a habit, you know, almost.
Sure. And you don't even have to have a wet fly. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, yeah, right. Yeah, I mean,
Have to have a wet fly. You don't even have a wet fly on. It could be a caddis pupa. It's all about positioning yourself in the stream in front of that target fish, and it's cool. It's all good stuff.
Yeah, and how many times have you're trying to sort out a tangle or something, and you've got some line out in the water downstream, and all of a sudden you have a fish on that is the fly dangling. And if you tried to do that, catch a fish, you never would, right? But so who's to say which presentation is better? It's like, it just depends, right? So
yeah, you better ask the trout. So that's what Davis Proper said, you know, what the trout said. So they'll tell you what works.
Yeah, the other one that you featured there was Clouser Minnow, which I think everybody knows that one, too.
Yeah, you know, I could not say enough about Bob. I grew up about 10 minutes from his shop, and his low-profile, humble demeanor, and but that fly, he was a super resource to me growing up as a kid, always super helpful, generous with information. But that fly, that Clouser Minnow, it's hard to think of a more effective fly. I don't know.
Yeah, I've caught trout on it. I've caught in the salt water all kinds of different fish, from barracuda to jacks. It catches everything.
So, it does.
Yeah,
it does.
Yeah, exciting. Smallmouth bass. But, yeah, listen, we got to take a quick break here. I've already run over time. I got to get too involved and having too much fun here. But give me a few seconds here, and we'll take a break and come right back. There are not many places in the world where you can fish for permit, tarpon, bonefish, and snook all within a few miles of each other, but you can in Belize. When you fish with Charlie Leslie Fly Fishing, you're on a private island and are only minutes away from some of the finest fly fishing in Belize. You'll start out from Placencia and take just a 30-minute boat ride to your lodging on the island. Once you're there, you'll be fishing lagoons full of tarpon and targeting permit on the flats of Permit Alley. Bonefish and snook are ready for your cast as well. Charlie Leslie, with over 50 years of experience in the waters of Belize, his son Marlon Leslie, and their other hand-picked guides know the local waters like no others. Book your next Belize adventure now with Charlie Leslie Fly Fishing. Visit charlielesliefishing.com. Again, that's charlielesliefishing.com, or call 303-430-4634. That's 303-430-4634. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We're talking with Eric Nagusky about fly patterns for Pennsylvania waters. If you'd like to ask Eric a question, just go to our homepage, askaboutflyfishing.com. Use that Q&A text box there to send us your questions, and we'll try to answer as many of them as we can tonight. Okay, Eric, tell us about what you've been up to. What's going on in your fly fishing world? Tell us about your business and what you do out there.
Yeah, well, we've been super busy. Like, I think everybody else has been around the country with one of the industries that have actually done okay with COVID and everything. Everybody has been trying to get out. I've had a lot of people the last 2 years say, you know, this is sort of like a bucket list thing that they want to do. You know, they want to go fly fishing. So it's been great. I mean, we've been incredibly busy. The book has been fun. Been doing a lot of getting out and doing some presentations to some groups, and that's fun as well. And, you know, just looking forward to coming into some cooler weather here and some fall hatches, and excited to just spend some more time on the water with people. I don't have an open day, I don't think, until November right now. It's been good.
What are the waters that you fish, Eric?
Typically, we're guiding on the Yellow Breeches Creek that runs here through the Cumberland Valley. Big Spring is one of our spring creeks that we guide on pretty often. It's got a great population of wild rainbow trout, which is kind of a unique thing for Pennsylvania. And we guide on the Latour. If people want to go get punished for the day, we can go out and we can see what we can do. It's interesting. It's never dull. We also, there's Clark's Creek, which is around me, north of Harrisburg. I also guide up around State College area on Penns, Big Fishing Creek, Spring Creek.
Wow.
A little bit on Spruce Creek. I get around.
Where do people find you? What's your website address? How do they get a hold of you?
My website is www.riseformsflyfishing.com. I have a social media presence as well. On Instagram, it's riseformsff, and I think my Facebook is just my name.
Okay.
Happy to have you. Happy to have anybody come out and go fishing with us. It's fun. It can be really challenging around here, but I think it's fun. worthwhile.
Yeah, I don't know about the Latorte. I mean, I get punished enough out there. I don't need him if I need extra punishment.
But the rewards, the rewards, the payoff is huge, though, you know. It may only be 8 inches, but it's still a reward.
You work for it, right? You work for it.
Yep, man. Absolutely.
Yeah, well, very good. Good. Share your website address once more for us, please.
It's www.riseformsflyfishing.com.
All righty. Thanks. Okay, let's dig into some questions that we've had from our listeners. Bob Garman in Pennsylvania is wondering if you know what is the oldest Pennsylvania fly pattern still in use. He says, all I can think of is the woolly bugger.
Let's see. I think the oldest thing that comes to mind that's still in pretty much everybody's fly box is the Henryville Special. That cat fly was designed for the Broadhead Creek in the Henryville House. Had some private water, a club. Very similar. The Poconos are very similar in their history to the Catskills. Just because of their proximity to Philadelphia and New York City, a lot of people were coming to the Poconos to fish, and the Broadhead is certainly a wonderful stream. It's cool for somebody like me who, you know, has a little bit of interest in the history of this fishing, and to spend some time on the Broadhead is a pleasure. The Henryville Special, it still is a great, super effective fly, great caddis pattern. You throw that thing on in a riffle, and it just bounces around just like a real caddis. It's a great fly. I can't think of anything that's older than that, but there probably is something, but I can't think of anything.
Now, since Bob mentioned it, you did highlight as one of the flies in your book, the woolly bugger. So what made that fly special to be included in your book?
Well, I mean, it's hard to think. We were just talking about this at the fly shop the other day. We were talking about these one fly tournaments, and there was a consensus that the woolly bugger, you'd be hard pressed to go wrong picking a woolly bugger. Just the inherent movement of that fly and the colors, if you're going to go, it could be a minnow. If you put a little bit of orange in there, maybe it's a crayfish, maybe it's a crane fly. You know, it's just a great fish-catching fly no matter where you go, no matter the time of year. You can strip it like a streamer. You can dead drift it like a nymph. It's just I hate to say a buggy fly because it's the woolly bugger, but it is. It's a buggy fly. It's just the movement and the construction of that fly lends itself to being one of the best of all times.
I've seen that in so many different colors and variations of colors, combined colors, cone head, just all kinds of different variations. What makes you reach for that fly?
I think for me, the woolly bugger, a lot of times, it's time of year. I probably don't use the woolly bugger as much as I should, but one of the things that I've noticed about the woolly bugger for me, and one of the times that I utilize it a lot in my guiding and my personal fishing, is summertime when we get like a short, heavy rainstorm in the afternoon. I'll put on a woolly bugger and I'll throw that thing right next to the bank, and I don't know what it is, but I don't know why, but it seems to work pretty often. I'm not going to say all the time, because in fishing and in bugs, you never say never and always, but it's a solid choice for that time of year. And, you know, the other great time for that woolly bugger is winter, dead drifting it slow, deep and slow. It's got enough beef to it that it'll, you know, I think it can induce those fish to move, to eat it. It can also be great around some structure if you have some wood in the water to kind of strip it and bring a fish out of its hiding place where it feels a little secure. It's just too easy, too big, too big of an easy meal, too easy of a big meal for those fish. I think it's
Rick Griffith, Virginia asks, because you just mentioned the fall, what are the best patterns for late September and early October besides the woolly bugger that you included in your book?
Yeah, I think right now, you know, we're getting into this time right now. If you're going to talk about dry flies, we're still in terrestrial season here. We certainly have a ton of like ground crickets. We have a lot of crickets in Pennsylvania, and a lot of the big carpenter ants. Chauncey Lively, his carpenter ant, he loved to fish it in the fall. The major insect patches are over. The waters are generally low. Those fish are looking for, they're starting to cool down. Those fish are looking for an easy meal. So ants, beetles, crickets, is a good thing to use right now. We're also going to start, and if you're really lucky, you can you'll fall into a flying ant hatch, if you will. It's not really a hatch, they're just moving. But anyway, and you know, that can be amazing fishing if you just happen upon it. This time of year, if you don't have like a size 20 or 22 flying ant in your box, you're in Pennsylvania, you're probably making a mistake. Because if you happen upon it and you don't have one, you're going to be sorry.
you did highlight Chubby Chernobyl in your book, which is that a good pattern for this time of year?
Yeah, absolutely. I had the last guide trip I had, we caught a bunch of fish on a little black, like a size 14 black chubby. With a, you know, we both on the dry and on the dropper, we drop whether it's a sexy waltz or a blowtorch or some sort of generic nymph, you know, something with a hot spot. I would always encourage at least trying something with an orange or a red hot spot for Pennsylvania waters as far as the nymphs go. But yeah, the chubby's a great one. Again, I like them in black because we have so many crickets. Some places we have good, decent hopper fishing, but I seem to do better with black or brown just because we have so many of those little ground crickets.
What other colors do you, like, carry with you?
For the chubby?
Yeah.
I carry black and purple. I carry a tan and orange. The tan and orange is a little bit of a wild one, for me at least. Honestly, if I'm being completely honest about why I carry that color, it's because a lot of times when I'm nymph fishing and I'm fishing, if I have somebody who's fishing a bobber, there's fish that come up and try to eat the indicator. So I'll put a hook in that indicator and call it a chubby. And drop that nymph off that fly. And there's times when I fish it without a dropper as well, but primarily it's used as in a dry dropper setup and people can see it. And for whatever reason, that orange seems to be a good color for PA.
Yeah. Were you going to, I kind of interrupted you there, but were you going to talk about other patterns for September, October?
Oh yeah. Well, it was actually, I was going to start to talk about betas, little olives. Mm-hmm. We get the fall olives here. They tend to be, the fall brood tends to be a little bit smaller than the one in the spring. In general, we're looking like a size 22, 24. And there are certainly some ones that are on size 20s, but for the most part, they're a little bit smaller this time of year. The other thing is caddis. We have October caddis. We have another orangish, like orange color, rust color caddis in the fall. So those are the main, at least dry flies.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking, it's a good time to streamer fish, pre-spawn, brown trout. If you like doing that, there's a ton of streamers out there. I would pick something that looks like a sculpin or a baby brown trout and have at it. It's definitely worthwhile. Those fish become aggressive, especially if you get a little bit of a rain. If the water gets a little off color, it's always a good time to prospect with a streamer.
One of the streamers you had in here was, and I know this because that was a roamer by Jake Villa.
Yeah.
Because I just interviewed him on smallmouth bass. So we were talking about that fly. Tell us what you like about that fly for a streamer.
I like it because of the action, the way that thing mimics if you do like a couple, like three or four quick strips and let it pause, that thing will T-bone or whatever. It'll turn broadside to the fish like a wounded fish, and it can sometimes elicit some pretty vicious strikes from the fish. I like Jake's use of materials in that fly. There's nothing on that fly that is not serving a purpose, which I think is really cool. And the glow, it's not overly gaudy with flash. The glow is sort of coming from within that fly. It's kind of hidden beneath the veil of materials. And I think it's just the right amount of flash. Yeah, I'm a big fan of the Roamer, for sure.
Okay, good, good. And you had mentioned a caddis. I noticed you have one of the old favorites, the Elfcare caddis, in your book. Do you have other caddis patterns in here?
Oh, yeah. I have. Yeah, absolutely. Tom Baltz has one of Tom Baltz's Iron X caddis that's in here. That's a super durable, high-floating, just a variation of the X caddis, which is also in the book. And the other one that I have in here is the Flux caddis. And that one kind of is a combination of several different caddis patterns. They all work. The Giant King's Splitsbill caddis is in here, and that's a great fly. Especially, I like it early mornings when there's some spent caddis just floating down the edges, and you know, you're kind of looking for that fish that's just eating anything that's floating by, kind of thing. I call them garbage eaters, but you know, if they're eating spent caddis or mayflies or whatever, Johnny King's Splitsbill caddis is a great one for that, for those fish. And brown shot are lazy.
Yeah, it lays lower in the water in the film, kind of.
Yeah, just like a spent caddis, and it's a good one. And that's one of those flies that travels well all over the country. So, yep.
Yeah, the Iron X kind of intrigues me. I did interview Tom Baltz on my show, so people can search for him in our archive and find out the show I did with Tom. But that's, you know, it's kind of a spruced up elk's hair caddis, right? I mean,
it's kind of like a
and squirrel and stuff in there, ice dub. Yeah.
Yeah. One thing you can see, Tom's a phenomenal tire and he's a phenomenal fishing guy. And if you look at a lot of his flies, if you're an angler, you can see the fly. And that's important when you're fishing dry flies. And it's super durable. It's got a ton of bugginess to it. It combines some of the elements of an X caddis, but then it's a little more wild. It's got the dubbing is picked out a little bit more to provide the appearance of legs and some movement. It's a good one.
Yeah. Let's take a quick break here, and then we'll come back and talk more about some of the flies that are in your book. So hang tight, everyone, and we'll be right back. Fly Fishers International needs your support. Its conservation projects at both the national and club level are addressing critical issues of importance to fly fishers. The organization provides grants to help with restoration of habitats like Wolf Creek in Idaho and Sands Creek in Delaware County, New York, and funds projects that collect valuable data about fish and their habitats like the Peacock Bass Study in Miami, Florida. FFI's core values remain unchanged to serve as a strong advocate for fly fishing in all waters for all fish, and to preserve and to promote the arts of fly casting and fly tying, and to help ensure future generations can continue to enjoy these one-of-a-kind experiences. These efforts won't be nearly as effective without your help. If you're not already a member, we invite you to join Fly Fishers International as they work to cultivate conservation, education, and community within the sport of fly fishing. Join Fly Fishers International today and help support their fine work. For more information, go to their website at flyfishersinternational.org. That's flyfishersinternational.org. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, and we're talking with Eric Noguski about fly patterns for Pennsylvania waters. If you'd like to ask Eric a question, just go to our homepage, fill out that form, send it in, and we'll try to get it answered. And speaking of which, Eric, we do have a couple that came in. One from Clint in Lisbon, New Hampshire says, what are your go-to winter patterns?
I really like Pat's Rubber Legs as a nymph with a bead. Get that thing down. The other one is the, like I was talking about earlier, I should have mentioned it, the Woolly Bugger. Just let that thing slide along the bottom. It's hard to beat that fly. The other one that comes to mind is the, not one away from my mind. I like Landon's Mini Leech in the wintertime a lot.
Right.
Mini Leech. That fly it's just big enough and it has so much movement in it. It's not intimidating to a fish who might just be like, I don't know if I'm going to eat that or not. Just laying there. I don't know if it's worth it. I don't know what that is exactly, but it's super buggy. It's got a lot of movement to it. It's not, I think it's just the right amount, right size for a lot of our fish. I think a lot of these big streamers, sure, they work great a lot of the time, but I think a lot of times small is better with streamers. And that, when I, the first time Landon showed me that fly, I was like, man, that thing's, I'm not giving it, I didn't give it back. I was like, I'm going to keep this. it's a good one. It's a good one.
How do you fish that, the mini leap?
Well, we were talking about winter and wintertime again. Unless I'm fishing one of the spring creeks where the water's relatively warm, you know, we have, it could be in the 50s in the wintertime. So I would fish it just like any other streamer. But I like to dead drift it. I like to, like, almost high stick it, like, right in front of some, and like an undercut bank or something, or some structure, and just kind of keep it there, and maybe with a little bit of pulsing, jigging motion, just kind of try to get that fish to come out of where he is. But, you know, that's another one like the woolly buck, or you could strip it like a streamer, you can drag it on the bottom, you can dead drift it. It's a phenomenal fly.
Mm-hmm. Let's see, questions. Gerald Bortz in Pennsylvania says, I've been noticing a number of spotted lantern flies recently and killed one yesterday. Do you have a pattern to share?
I don't. We don't have them here in the Cumberland Valley yet, so I haven't been forced to tie one. I'm sure we will soon, though.
Okay. Phil McCartney in Kentucky wrote in and said, what lessons have you learned from the fish in Pennsylvania that translate well or poorly to other waters? Are there go-to flies in your home waters that cause a feeding frenzy elsewhere or result in utter rejection?
I don't know that I've ever seen trout go on a feeding frenzy, but I know what he means. And yeah, I mean, there's certainly some flies that work really well. One of them, the first one that comes to mind is the CDC loopwing emerger. That fly has some built-in movement with the buggy dubbing on the abdomen. And for those of you who don't have the book, it's the loopwing, CDC loopwing emerger is basically an entire nymph on the rear two-thirds of the hook and then the adult, emerging adult mayfly on the front third of the hook with a CDC bubble or loopwing. And there's a color variation between the adult mayfly part and the nymph part. It hangs real low in the surface film. Has worked great on the Henry's Fork, on wherever I go, that fly works. If there's mayflies that hatch midstream, that's my go-to emerger no matter where I am.
Now you have there in your book, you say Hendrickson version, so you tie that in different versions for the different...
Absolutely. Mayflies. Yeah, absolutely. I think any of the mayflies that hatch midstream, by that I'm kind of excluding things like the Eastern March Brown and like the slate drakes, where they tend to migrate to the edges and climb out onto rocks, or they're not, that emerger pattern doesn't seem to work as well for those. That's simply because of their life history and their biology. But, yeah, for the Hendrickson, sulfurs, the big blue-wing olives, the Drunellas, east and west, you know, I've fished that fly for the western green drake, and it just, yeah, it's great.
Yeah, it's, and by the way, you didn't say so, but this is your design, and I think it's very unique. I don't think I've seen a fly like that anywhere else. So kudos to you.
Well, thanks.
It fits a need, right, in that life cycle that's happening.
So. Yeah, absolutely. You know, there's not a really, other than when that mayfly is a spinner and spent and dead laying on the water, there's not really another time where that fly is as vulnerable to the trout as it is when it's emerging. So, and oftentimes the fish can get really, really picky on those and just kind of focus on that stage of emergence.
Don in Montana wrote in and says, what hatches would be expected on the Little Lehigh between now and when the snow flies?
I think for the most part of the Little Lehigh, right now you're looking at midges, and like I was speaking on earlier, the fall olives. Those are probably the two things you're most likely to encounter over there. Ants are always a good bet, too.
Okay. Bob Hergen in Endicott, New York, wrote in and says, for 40 years, I've mostly fished the west branch of the Delaware from the dam down to the main Delaware and about the first 5 miles of the main Delaware, almost always looking for risers to fish dries. The hatches at one time were incredible. From my many years of fishing that river, I pretty much know which hatches to expect when and throughout the season. Unfortunately, over the past 5 to 10 years, the hatches have been getting fewer and sparser. And this year was the worst ever. Having talked to a guide who fishes it almost daily, he has seen the same thing, a lack of good hatches. Have you experienced the same thing in your PA waters?
You know, it's a good question. And I'm going to say yes and no. There's a lot of conservation efforts going on, a lot of good best management practices going on in some watersheds where, you know, there's been agricultural or abandoned mine drainage issues or what are stormwater issues. Pick your issue. But the places where that the conservation efforts and the restoration work has been done, yeah, I've seen places come back, places that didn't used to have a Hendrickson hatch and now have it, places that had only a couple green drakes, eastern green drakes, now have a fishable hatch. One of the best examples of this, I think, is probably the Little Juniata River and the Little Juniata River Association up there. Those people have worked tirelessly and care a lot about that watershed and that fishery, and it's paid off over the years. They've done a ton of work, and the local conservation districts and watershed associations have all worked really, really hard to improve a lot of these waters. Now, that said, there's still a lot of other ones that are getting worse. I mean, I think a lot of the ones that are getting worse are being impacted more by urban and suburban sprawl and stormwater issues. Mm. Yeah, there's definitely some that, like I said, have great hatches where they didn't before. So let's focus on the positive and see what's possible. And see what's possible, yeah. Really, through effort.
Yeah.
You know, it could definitely, the bugs will come back. It's I've seen it time and time again over the years. You know, all it takes is a couple people who really care about a watershed and lots of money, usually, but, you know.
Lots of money. Yeah, that helps, right? Bill Jones in Montana wrote in and says, hi, Eric, the Latorte has always been a problem for me. We talked about this earlier. The most effective flies are nymphs, but the fishing lanes are narrow, and I almost always come up with weeds. I've had a little success with floating nymphs on the surface. Do you have any recommendation for good dry flies? Or just, you know, any recommendations for him fishing the Latorte?
Yeah, I do. You know, the Latorte is an interesting place. I think it depends. You know, I'm going to take a short question and give you a long answer.
That's fine.
It depends on the time of year, really. One thing that, if you're aware of what the bug activity is like on the Latorte, probably the best time for dry fly fishing starts in late February, early March, and goes until May. There's a real good hatch of the early stoneflies, the winter stoneflies, late winter sprint stoneflies, decent hatch of blueing olives. And although this is one that has been declining in recent years, there's still a fishable sulfur hatch on occasion. And then I think his question he asks about the flies, patterns, you know, if you're going to fish that stonefly hatch, it's hard to go wrong with another Jake Volok pattern, the spring stone, which is a great early season stonefly. You can float it dead drift, or you can skitter it across the surface. It's a really nice pattern. As far as for the olives, it's hard to go wrong with one of Henry Ramsey's CDC thorax duns in a small, like a size 20, or like a CDC compared dun, and the small size and the coloration of the blueing olives. Then we get into summertime. It gets tough. The weed growth, like Bill mentioned, you know, there's lots of weeds. You can fish some terrestrials like a Shanks cricket. I like the Charlie Craven's. What's the
Charlie Boy?
The Charlie Boy hopper. I fish that in black. Because we really just don't have the hoppers like they do elsewhere. So, again, black. I'm looking at crickets. A beetle, ants, Tom Baltz says I can see it. Ant is a great one. I would stick to those times of year when you – the thing about the Latour is you're trying to – I mean, Bill's coming from Montana, so it's hard for him to hedge his bets and go when it's going to be good. But, you know, when I think about the Latour, that's when I think of it, the early spring, late winter, early spring. I think the best opportunities for dry fly fishing are certainly that time. Once winter comes and the weeds die back a little bit, the streamer fishing can be phenomenal, and you can really see what's happening. You can move some giants in the Latour. I'm not going to say you're going to catch them, but you'll see them.
Yeah, you just spoke, and that's what his question was, about dry flies. Is there any effective way to fish nymphs when the weeds are there and the lanes are narrow?
It's tough. I mean, you really do. The best nymph fishing that I generally have is during the sulfur or the blue and olive hatch, where I'll drop an unweighted or a very lightly weighted nymph off of the dry fly in mid-column. When those fish are seeing those, when the nymphs are active and they're moving throughout the water column, either through drifting or swimming to the surface to emerge, I think that's probably your best bet for nymphing the Latour. The other thing you can do is with like a crest bug, if you can sight fish to a fish that might be up on a weed bed, taking crest bugs out of the weeds, you can sight fish to that fish.
Yeah. Okay. We did get a question on the internet. John in Manoa, New York, he says he wants to know what your favorite fly is. Do you have a favorite?
No, I don't have a favorite fly. I think I'm a dry fly guy. Mm-hmm. If I had to pick a dry fly, it would probably be that CDC loopwing emerger for mayflies. You know, I'm partial to
your design.
It's my design, it's real similar to some of the Shane Stallcup emergers and Renee Harrop's CDC bubbleback caddis. You know, that's another really great fly. You know, most fly tying is derivative, and I hate to say it's my pattern, because all I'm doing is incorporating elements that I've seen from other things and that I've noticed in what the behavior of the insects. So
yeah.
I don't know.
It looks buggy, though. It kind of reminds me. It's got hairsier characteristics of that bugginess.
Absolutely.
Good. So that's CDC Loopwing Emerger, which is in your book here. And most all of these ones that you've been talking about are in your book here. By the way, Eric does provide the recipes in the book, but he also talks about the flies and also the fishing techniques he uses to fish those flies. So a lot of these, even if you know them, might be valuable to pick up Eric's book and check out what he thinks and how he uses those kind of flies. So anyway, Rob Conowich in Pennsylvania wrote, and he says, I am a Pennsylvania native who attempts to fly fish in central PA area around Harrisburg. I'm getting into Euro nymphing. What should I tie and fill my box with?
I think, you know, if you're talking about Euro nymphing, you're going to want something that's going to get down and enable you to use that tight line system. So if you have something like a waltz worm or a sexy waltz worm, something maybe with, or a Pat's rubber leg, something with some heft, it's a good thing for a point fly. A Frenchie, these are all, I'm just picking flies out of the book, a Frenchie or even just a pheasant tail, a beadhead pheasant tail or unweighted pheasant tail up above a weighted fly, like a squirmy worm. And a lot of people don't like that, the squirmy worm, but, you know, you can't argue that it's a fish catcher. It is. And I'll leave that at that. But and especially for someone who's, you know, just getting into, like, that whole Euro nymphing or tight line nymphing, I think the patterns like the squirmy worm are really effective in that not only are they good fish catchers, but they're consistent fish catchers, and they're going to give you enough weight to stay tight to that fly and to really learn what it looks like when a fish eats your fly. Why not hedge your bets? If you want to be a purist when you grow up, you can do wait till you grow up to do that. But there's a lot of flies. Any of the nymphs in the book, Green Weenie is another really phenomenal nymph. And it's a Pennsylvania fly. And it would be an excellent fly for the whole tight line system.
Now the Green Weenie reminds me of a mop fly. I mean, it's real similar. You know, you don't have the mop fly in there, but, you know, that was a fly like, what the heck's a mop fly? I was up on this small mountain stream just outside of Bozeman a couple years ago, and I had some of those, and I said, you know what, I'm just going to throw that in there and see what happens, and I'll be darned if I didn't catch a fish on it. And I know darn well that fish never saw a mop fly before in his life. So, you know, you got to wonder sometimes. Who's to judge? It's kind of like the squirmy wormy. It's like, but it catches fish, you know?
It does, you know? And honestly, the mop fly, especially, I'm not saying a big chartreuse mop fly fits this bill, but in a tan or a more natural color, it looks just like a big crane fly larvae that's in the water.
Yeah.
I mean, you're literally matching the hatch with those. And the green weenie, to a certain extent, fills that bill as well. There's we have a lot of hemlock trees on a lot of our streams, and there's a small green caterpillar that feeds on hemlocks. And in June, early June, you know, it's hard to beat a green weenie on a stream that has hemlocks, you know.
Yeah, interesting. Let's see here. Terry in Myersdale, Pennsylvania. I really enjoy Yellow Creek in Bedford County, the fly fishing project. It often gets confused with Yellow Creek in Indiana County. First, have you fished Yellow Creek in Bedford County? And second, what flies besides a typical terrestrial would you recommend hanging off a dry dropper rig? And how long should the dropper be?
Well, to pick up on the end of the question, the dropper, I typically tailor that to the depth of the end current speed, depth of the water, and how fast the current's going and how heavy my nymph is. Again, I'm going to do a dry dropper. I'm going to want something that's going to be able to float that nymph, you know, good buggy caddis pattern, you know, like Tom's Iron X or X caddis or even an Elfair caddis, you know, something that's going to be able to float those slightly heavier nymphs is always a good idea. I have fished Yellow Creek in Bedford County a lot. It's, you know, it's another good spring creek that, you know, we're fortunate to have access to. It kind of depends on the time of year as far as what dry fly you're putting on there. I would try to match what I'm seeing in the air and the water. And Terry, you know, he says that, or she says, that the typical terrestrial, but that the typical terrestrial might be the right thing at the right time. Depends on time.
Right, it might be the exact thing. She also asked about whether you've seen big streamers being used on Yellow Creek effectively. And she is bigger than typical.
I don't have
bugger.
I don't have any experience with fishing big streamers on Yellow Creek. The water is more suited. It's a really good stream to nymph and dry fly fish pocket water. I don't have a whole lot of streamer experience up there. I'm sure they work. You know, they work everywhere else. I wouldn't go too big there, but this one streamer that I have in the book, the Full Pint, which is a Dominic Swentowski fly, is a really nice one for those types of waters.
Mm-hmm. And which one was that again?
It's a Full Pint streamer.
Oh, yeah, 34. Just want to see what that looked like.
It's got...
Go ahead.
It's mallard flank and marabou with one articulation in a cone, copper cone. It's mm-hmm. fairly good representation of, if you want to say it's a young brown trout, but I think it's...
got that color in it.
It does, and it's got a lot of movement. It's a really nice looking fly. It swims well.
Looks like it would move quite readily in the water. A lot of movement. Okay. We had a question about Driftless region. Driftless isn't in Pennsylvania, but have you ever fished there? Do you know anything about it? Or should we just...
I have never fished there. The Spring Creek. The only thing I know about the Driftless and the Spring Creek is and fly patterns is the pink squirrel, which is the fly from that region. Mm. And I know it works. It works other places too, but
okay.
But that's a good one.
Alan Coop in New Jersey asks, how do you feel about night mousing for large browns? Should you leave the fish alone, or is it okay to target them? I feel it is okay to throw a mouse pattern at night, but I've heard from others that they feel the fish should be left alone.
Yeah, this has become sort of a controversial subject in some places over the last few years. I think, in my opinion, it's okay. I think it depends on where you are. If those fish are getting real heavily pressured, what comes to mind initially for me is the upper Delaware system, the west branch of the Delaware and the main stem and some other places that just see a lot of fishermen. And those fish, you can see them when you catch them, even on a dry fly, you can tell when they've been hooked with a big streamer or mouse pattern or whatever, with big hooks. They're pretty beat up. And, I think that's up to the individual angler to decide what they're comfortable doing. We certainly do that occasionally around here. Well, a tort's not a bad place to do that, but I probably only do it, half a dozen times a year. That's something that the angler has to deal with for themselves. And I think on heavily pressured water, you may want to give it some more consideration. But, if there's no law against it, who am I to tell somebody they can't do it?
But you said you've noticed some damage to the fish. Is it because they're using larger hooks in the mice?
I don't know if they're – I can't blame it on the mice, but definitely bigger streamers and with big hooks.
It's not mice mouse-specific. It's just, bigger streamers in general.
I think it's more just heavily pressured waters where do you really need to be going after them 24 hours a day. And that's up to the individual. If there's nothing to say that, there's no regulation that says they can't do it, that's up to them.
All that, with that said, though, that twilight zone is probably the best time to hook into a big brown, right? Not necessarily nighttime, but as it's turning, that's when they begin to come out, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You can definitely catch some really nice fish that way, and it's super effective. I'm not a big numbers guy, and I don't think most mouse fishermen are, but it's certainly a viable option in a lot of locations. And in some locations where, like for instance, here in Pennsylvania, we have some waters that are, I call them marginal trout waters. A lot of some of our bigger streams that flow through some of our limestone valleys have limestone tributaries, and they stay relatively cool. And we have a lot of big brown trout that are migratory, for lack of a better word. These fish move around in the system from depending upon the time of year. And, those fish are prime candidates for a nice nighttime mousing adventure if you go at the right time of year and, when the water's cold and they're there. Like you said, it's a good time to find a big one.
Yeah. I've been a friend of mine, Richard Polatsky, who I've interviewed several times on the show as well. He shared his little mouse pattern with me. It's made out of baccarat foam. You can get it like Home Depot with stripped pine squirrel for the, hackled around the, palmered around the hook for the body. And, it's got a little kick up a piece of foam in the front, but it's a dynamite little pattern, easy to tie and mm-hmm. so much fun here to just see the on the lake by my house to see them come up and hit that thing, but not at night.
Oh,
you know.
Yeah.
As a
and that, I guess
setting.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
There are small mice too. They all aren't rat size, you know. So you don't necessarily have to use a big hook.
And he's fished that little pattern all over here in Colorado. Caught rainbows, browns, smallmouth, panfish. I mean, you know, just about anything. Anywhere he puts it in the water, he's catching something on that. So it's like all these fish love to eat mice. And makes me, you know, want to fish it more at times. So, yeah. Well, good. Well, hey, we got to wrap it up here. We're running out of time. But, Eric, stick with me here a bit longer because we're going to give away a membership to Fly Fishers International and a one-year subscription to Fly Fishing and Tying Journal and a copy of your book, Favorite Flies for Pennsylvania, courtesy of Stackpole Books. So stick with me a few more minutes, and we'll give away those prizes and wrap up the evening. The fly community has been at the vanguard of the battle to protect Bristol Bay for many years. A resolution may be in our reach, but we need everyone to be engaged. Take the Bristol Bay Challenge, sponsored by Businesses for Bristol Bay, the American Fly Fishing Trade Association, and the AFTA Fisheries Fund, and you could win some of the $18,000 in outdoor gear. Go to this URL, and it's kind of long, but I'll give it to you. Go to stoppebblemindnow.org. So it's stoppebblemindnow.org/, and then these words have hyphens between the hyphen Bristol hyphen Bay Challenge. So /the-Bristol-Bay-Challenge. Fill out the form on that page and help out the Bristol Bay cause, and you may get a chance to win some great prizes with them as well. I'd like to see this, as most everyone would, put to bed, and so we don't have to talk about it any longer, but it looks like our help is still needed, so see what you can do to help them out. Just a reminder to everyone, before you leave the website tonight, please take a minute and give us your feedback about the show. You can find a link on our homepage in the section under tonight's show that says, what did you think of this show? Just click on that link and leave your comments. We'd really appreciate it. And now it's time to give away our prizes. And the winners of these, our drawings, are randomly selected from the show's registration database. And if you didn't register for tonight's show, it's too late now, but make sure you do so for our next show so you don't miss out on your chance at the great prizes we have to offer. If you are the lucky winner, we'll contact you after the show, provide you with information on how to receive your prize. So first, we'll be giving away a one-year membership to Fly Fishers International. And to learn more about FFI, go to flyfishersinternational.org and check them out. I'm sure you'll want to join if you don't win tonight. Let me get my database set up here. And looks like Charles Rogers in South Carolina is our winner of the one-year membership to Fly Fishers International. So, Charles, congratulations, and we'll contact you after the show to get your information and get you your prize. And our second thing is that we're giving away a one-year subscription to Fly Fishing and Tying Journal, which you can learn more about at AmatoBooks.com, another publisher of some great periodicals and books on fly fishing. So check them out, Fly Fishing and Tying Journal. So the winner for that is Jason Daly in Pennsylvania. Jason Daly. So congratulations, Jason. And you too, we will contact after the show to get your information. All right. So now time to give away a copy of Eric's book, Favorite Flies for Pennsylvania. And if you want to check that out too, we did put a link on our homepage there just to the right. You'll see Eric's book there, so you can check that out there and get more information. And to do this, let me just clear my queue here, and okay, so the question is, Eric was asked this evening what he thought the oldest Pennsylvania fly was, and he had it highlighted in his book. What do you think that is? What did Eric say about that this evening? What's the name of that fly? So let's see, Eric, what they come up with. It takes them a couple seconds to hear us because there's a slight delay, and then they have to think and type and stuff like that. Well, let's see what we get. We get the right answer here. All right, just refreshing the queue here and looking for that answer. Oh, maybe nobody knows that one. Oh, I don't think that was it. Bob Younger wrote in the Woolly Bugger, but that wasn't it, was it, Eric?
No, it was not.
Not the one that you had come up with. So you can cross that one off the list. I'll give you a hint. It starts with a man's first name. And, boy, I didn't think that one was going to be this hard. Okay, I'll make it easy. Well, since nobody else is answering on that, Eric, let's just give it to Bob Younger here. Because okay, that was the one that was brought up in the question, so we'll give it to Bob. Got no other players. I guess I kind of stumped him. This is kind of a first. It's the first time that nobody's answered the question. So either that or we got technical difficulties that I don't know about. But, hey, Bob, you just won yourself Eric's book. So just by giving it a shot, look what happened. So, Bob, send me your address, shipping address. I've got your name, got your email address. Send me your shipping address in the same box that you just answered the question in, and we'll get Stackpole to send out a copy of Eric's book, Favorite Flies for Pennsylvania. So check it out. If you didn't win tonight, go buy it. There's a link on the front of our website there. You can do it there. Go out to Amazon, wherever pleases you most, and pick up Eric's book. I think you'll find it very interesting and informative. With that out of the way, then, Eric, I just want to thank you for being on the show with me tonight, and thanks so much for sharing your knowledge and your expertise, and I hope your book does well, and I hope a lot of people go out and get it. So thanks so much for being with us tonight.
Well, Roger, hey, thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure. I was looking forward to it, and it certainly didn't disappoint.
Well, good, good. Hope
really,
you had fun.
I really appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. Good to have you. Hopefully you've all found the podcast archive on our website. If you haven't, just look for the link in the top line menu. The archive, you'll find all of our past shows, over 345 shows now, which you can search by keyword phrase like trout, tarpon, Madison River, Pennsylvania, you name it. You're going to find things in our archive. So check it out, and I know you'll be pleasantly surprised by what you find there. Our next broadcast will be on October 6th, 7 p.m. Mountain, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. And on that show, I'll interview Roy Tanami. And our topic for the show will be Angling the World. Roy is a leading international outdoor photographer who has traveled the world in search of fish to catch on the fly and beautiful photographs to capture the experiences. He's been to Kamchatka, Brazil, New Zealand, Mongolia, and many other more wild places. As a traveling fly angler, he's experienced the good, the challenging, and the wonderful things you can encounter while traveling and fishing. Join us to hear about Roy's travels, experiences, and how he's able to capture the world and fly fishing in his stunning photographs. Be sure to add that upcoming show to your calendar. Just click on the Add to Calendar button just below his photograph on our homepage, and then you can add it to your calendar, and you'll be all set. We'd like to thank Fly Fishers International and Motto Books, Lee's Ferry Anglers, Charlie Leslie Fly Fishing for sponsoring our show tonight. And don't forget to visit our website at askaboutflyfishing.com and make sure you signed up to receive our announcements so you won't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Thanks for listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We hope you enjoyed the show. That's it. Good night, everyone, and good fishing. Welcome.